Okay, we'll open the House Committee on Human Services and Housing. Could you close that door, please? Thank you. And we will open up the public hearing on House Bill 2392. And Regina.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2392 modifies Youth Development Council membership to include county representatives, requires the YDC to prioritize and identify funds to support community-based youth development programs. There is no fiscal impact, and it may have, there's no revenue impact, and it may have a fiscal impact, and the statement has not been issued yet.
We obviously have a lot of interest in this. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 people wanting to speak. Okay, Representative Clem, did you bring enough backup here, do you think?
I just like to bring non-controversial music bills. That's what I like to do.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Brian Clem, state representative from, you're sitting in it, District 21, here in Central and East Salem. As you know, this last session we passed 4165, which outlined many of the details for the work of the Early Learning Council. And initially, there were some concerns that the only early learning that would be covered was 0 to 6. And so then Representative Kotek, now Speaker, worked to add in the Youth Development Council that would help cover youth past the age of 6. And that transition has been going on. There were clear legislative direction and mandates for the Early Learning Council. There were design teams. There was a lot of work to sort of transition what would happen in that younger cohort. And the legislation also put in a bunch of sideboards. And, you know, eventually there was obviously huge systems change. And people were uncomfortable whenever that happens, whether it's healthcare, education, or social services. But I think in the end, most people would say they feel pretty good about where we're at. The add-on that helped got negotiated for the older portions, you know, 6 to 18, doesn't have as much detail, didn't have a design team, and that's the Youth Development Council. And that's what I'm here to talk about. It's been, the council's now been appointed. They've gotten membership. They've met two or three times, I think, last fall. But they're early in their stages, and so, you know, to some extent, some might think what I'm asking us to consider is premature, but I also don't want to get a system designed and ingrained without legislative input. And you know, some of this is branch issues. You know, often the legislature likes to have things that we vote on, say it's going to be this, this, and this. The executive branch will say, no, leave that up to us. And maybe we'll bring it in for a confirmation in the Senate, something like that. So, you know, some of this is natural to the system. For example, this governor has already essentially met what I would want in the bill for pretty broad geographic representation through his appointments. He, you know, I want him to, but if he doesn't run again in a year, or so there's some new governor and they don't do it, I would have some pretty serious concerns. So one part of the bill is to kind of guarantee some slots. Again, executive branch may not want slots because that leaves all the authority and discretion to the executive branch. Legislative branch often likes slots because then we know that our communities, who we represent, are going to have formalized official input. So there's going to be some tension, and I wish I could have brought you a bill that had none, but there will certainly be some tension between probably the branches around those sort of things. And I would like to lock in some of those things, but probably because I'm from the legislative branch and I want to know that I have a really good, strong group of people who have been working for a long time in this community, and I want to make sure they continue to have input and not just at the goodwill of this particular governor. I also am concerned about transition. And essentially, as you may know, the statutory authority for the commissions ends on July 1, but I don't think any of the hubs are likely to be in place at that time. And so that period from this July until January 1, I would like us to consider, you know, essentially what happens during that period, because I am concerned about what would happen. And we're talking hundreds, potentially, of contracts that would need to be let and approved in order to replace the various services that all the counties and commissions are doing around the state if we went purely to a contract model. So there would be a tremendous amount. So one thought I had is, you know, could we essentially extend the authority of at least the commissions that the YDC or you know, the governor's office believes have been successful in the past, extend their authority at least until a hub is up and running in their area. So that period, there's nobody lost during that period. Finally, some of the other materials in advance of this bill I've gotten, lead me to believe there would definitely be an emphasis on gang issues. In my district, that's a big deal, really big deal. Some parts of the district, the state, maybe that's not a big deal, and teen pregnancy, you know, is a bigger issue. Or maybe they're interrelated. I mean, these are the kind of things that having something very centralized at a state council can get you into trouble without enough local input, because every community is different. And what are the major issues between ages 6 and 18 will vary widely from community to community. And that's why we sort of had a decentralized system. The Youth Development Council ends up looking like a state centralized system again that then will contract out for those community-based programs, but still, they're not communities designing their own solutions entirely. They're communities designing solutions, making a proposal, hoping the council will sign off and let the contract to them. And so I just want to make sure we maintain as much of that flavor of local districts and local communities saying what the biggest needs are in their communities. In the past, you know, formulas that spit it out to the counties and they figured it out, that was sort of the way we did it. There seems to be a desire to have more centralization to get more accountability and more performance-based contracting. I don't think there's necessarily a problem with performance-based contracting, but again, if you don't have some guarantees and you focus it on one particular societal problem like school safety or something else, that can have a regional shift in funds. Like if we only did gang issues, for example, and then they're only a problem in Marion County, well, then my county would get all the money. That's not what you all would necessarily think is fair. That's why county-based, you know, formulas were probably fair, but the concern is they're not generating enough performance. So this bill is up, open for discussion, open for amendments. The point is get some more parameters around the Youth Development Council like we had on the Early Learning Council through the design team, those kind of things, to get the people who have to do this work more comfortable. And with that, I should let you probably hear from the people who do this work, because it's not me, and they will be able to tell you a lot more specifically, you know, what they're interested in.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions of Representative Klim? Thank you very much for bringing us this bill.
Yeah.
And when you signed up for this, one of the questions that you were asked was, did you live more than 100 miles from this meeting point? And there were 1, 2, 3, 4 people who did say that, even though they weren't at the top of the list. So I will be calling on them first, in case we have to continue this hearing to another time. So Brenda Comini, is that correct? Thank you. Steve Shinerwork?
Shinerwork.
Thank you, Steve. Ronnie Lindsay. And after that, we will have maybe Minda Morton? Minda, okay. We've only got 3 chairs here, so I'll call you up after this, Minda. Okay, and why don't you come and sit down and leave those with her, and we'll have somebody start talking. And I'm going to give you, because we have so many people, I'm sorry, I can only give you 2 minutes. I know you left materials, and we will get to those. We probably will not have a work session on this today, which means we won't be voting on it, but we will very carefully look at your materials that you leave. So go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Tomei, committee members, and...
Oh, excuse me 1 minute. Could you, as Vice Chair, would you please keep track of my 2 minutes? Do you have a watch?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, thank you. And he will hold up his hand when you've got 30 seconds. Does that sound good to you? Great. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Tomei, committee members, and Representative Wismith from my neighboring county and friend and neighbor. I'm here today representing Crook County.
Name, please.
I'm sorry, my name is Brenda Comini.
Thank you.
And I'm here representing Crook County, located in the geographic center of the state. And Commissioner Falgren and Judge McCabe give their regrets that they could not be here today. and we have provided a written testimony. I'm here today in support for the proposed bill and amendments to House Bill 2392 as sponsored by Representative Klemp. In Crook County, we have experienced economic diversity, an increase in issues of drug and alcohol and other substance abuse, and crime over the years while facing reduced resource levels. In our area, in 1999, we did an assessment of juvenile arrests, and our arrest record for property crimes was 24.7 per thousand population, the highest in the state. In our sleepy little county, where you would think those would not be issues, they were. They are not, and were not then, gang-related, but they still were significant, and the juvenile population was still very clearly feeding an adult correction system that was costly. Our recidivism rates for juvenile crime were also reported at 52.2%. As a community, we began the process of determining who these kids were and what the contributing issues that caused our relatively quiet community to see and continue these high rates of arrest. With no services available to youth who showed distinct risk factors indicating probability of juvenile system involvement, we began to look at strategies that work for other rural communities across the nation in helping stem the flow of juvenile crime and the costs associated. The overarching goals that we honed in on were to reduce the number of juveniles entering the formal juvenile justice system, promote school retention and educational success, and develop young adults who had a vision and a plan for a productive future.
Sorry. 10 seconds.
And those are the goals that we have today. And so working through a panel of services that are outlined on your handout, we developed a plan that has effectively reduced our juvenile arrest rate by the year 2000 in half. And we are seeing increased numbers of kids who are actually being retained in school and completing school and moving on, and a decrease in the flow to the actual adult correction system.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate you coming to testify.
Thank you.
Hi. Thank you for letting me come. I appreciate it. I'm Ronnie Lindsay from Lake County. I am reading this letter. Basically, it's signed by all three of my commissioners.
You might want to tell us, because we're going to get the letter. So tell us what you want us to know.
Okay. Basically, we feel that the bill provides an opportunity to reflect the needs of our state's great youth and provides equitable funding for youth prevention. In our particular county, our main issues are drug and alcohol use, not necessarily gang. And so we really appreciate and greatly support the efforts for fair and equitable payments to the counties.
Great. Thank you. Remind me what county you are.
Lake County.
Lake. Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much. You did good.
Can I have your extra time?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Dr. Steve Schoenewerk, and I have been pastor at the Community Baptist Church in Winston, Oregon, since 1991. I'm a founding member of the Winston Area Community Partnership and currently serving as its president. I serve as a volunteer member of the Build Our Kids Steering Committee, the Winston Education Community Network, and I'm past president of the Winston-Dillard Chamber of Commerce. I also chair the Healthy Start Healthy Families of Douglas County Advisory Committee. And I'm here to speak in support of HB 2392 as amended. Winston is a core partner in Build Our Kids, which is a collaborative, evidence-based initiative that has improved youth outcomes in Douglas County communities. That program was made possible because Douglas County leveraged youth investment dollars to gain private contributions through our local Rotary Clubs to write foundation grants, including $90,000 that was awarded last year from the Ford Family Foundation, and we recently received notification of an additional $200,000 from the Ford Family Foundation funds for our Build Our Kids initiative, which was based on our track record of successful outcomes. In Winston, 80% of the children in our community schools qualified for free or reduced lunch. Wake Up, Winston Area Community Partnership, was formed in response back in 1999 to two middle school students who died tragically within 5 weeks of each other. We built a community center in our community. We raised over $800,000 from over 400 individual donors and businesses. We built a community center that includes a a teen center, a senior center, a library, meeting rooms, a performing arts stage. And we continue to rely upon county leadership to continue offering the programs and development opportunities through Build Our Kids. We're concerned that if the State Youth Development Council awards funds competitively to nonprofits, youth from rural Oregon will no longer reap the benefits from these experiences. We believe, and I believe, our youth in Winston deserve equal consideration to youth in other parts of the state. I've also included letters from County Commissioner Joe Lawrence and a letter of support from Lincoln County and Coos County.
Thank you so much. That was great. You have one more minute.
Since I only used 30 seconds of my time.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to let you know the one thing that I forgot to say was that the Lake County Board of Commissioners confirms to support the House Bill 2392 as amended.
Great. Tell them hello for us, and thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming so far.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. And I know somebody else came far. Hillary Saraceno? Just sit down and start talking.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I would like to, good afternoon, I want to thank you for the opportunity to come and speak with you today in favor of House Bill 2392 and the clarifying amendments proposed by Representative
Clem. We need your name.
What's that?
We need your name.
Oh, Hillary Saraceno.
Thank
I meant
you.
To say that.
Thank you.
From Deschutes County. So House Bill 2392 includes some important language that provides a framework to protect and improve services for youth across Oregon, not just those involved in gangs. Some would say the bill is an effort to maintain the status quo. I would agree with that 100% if funds are not used effectively or achieving targeted outcomes. However, I'm not asking for the status quo, but caution you about unintended consequences. At the risk of sounding trite, I don't think we should throw away the baby out with the bathwater or rob Peter to pay Paul or to rob non-gang youth for gang youth. House Bill 2392.
Go back a little bit from your mic.
Okay, sorry.
Or just move it ahead of you.
All right.
Good.
I'm not very experienced at this.
Okay. You're doing fine.
House Bill 2392 moves us cautiously forward to minimize the negative impact loss of funding will have for communities across the state where there are no gangs. In Central Oregon, we do not have gangs. We are one of those counties that does not have gangs, but we have youth that are at risk due to a variety of factors. The youth investment funds, which are the funds at stake here, make a big difference in our communities and play a significant role in helping to achieve the governor's 40-40-20 educational goals and outcomes. But under the current criteria, it wouldn't qualify the current prioritizing language for gang violence. Two main programs funded with youth investment were prioritized by our community to fill a gap in services prioritized by our county. One is the Loft. I've given you a handout. It's the only homeless shelter for youth in Central Oregon. Some quick facts. The youth investment dollars that we invest average for 186 youth per year, more than the 2,000 served by that agency. The average age is 15. Most of them are female. And 80% of the youth report suffering abuse as by an adult. This is to say that they're not the stereotypical kids acting out, but that they're youth who are running away for good reason. The outcomes invested during are driving towards the governor's...
About 10 seconds.
Oh, I thought you said 1 minute.
No,
I'm sorry. So 86% of the 186 youth served by Cascade Youth and Family Investment Funds improved their academic progress, and 96% of the youth reconnected with families. So I guess in closing, on behalf of Deschutes County, as well as Cynthia and Jessica, whose letters and testimonial you've been given today, who were not able to be here, I ask that you support House Bill 2392 with the clarifying amendments.
Thank you very much, Hillary.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Minda Morton. I'm the Jefferson County Commission on Children and Families Program Manager. And I'd like to share with you information today about Jefferson County Kids Club After School Program, which receives considerable funding from youth investment funds. Of the 3,000 K-12 students in our county, Kids Club currently serves a total of 260 low-income children. On any given day, Kids Club sees 150 to 175 children. The program provides a hot meal, homework assistance, enrichment activities in art, science, physical fitness, as well as mentoring. In a county with one of the highest dropout rates in Oregon, Kids Club has consistently met its goals around school attendance and academic achievement for the last several years. And in your handout, I've pulled out some parts of their quarterly reports that address those issues. We are a small rural community with over 75% of our school children on free and reduced meal programs. While we do not have a large gang problem, as some communities do, our kids are very vulnerable to other criminogenic risk factors. If Kids Club were to lose its youth investment funds under a competitive RFP process focused on gangs, the impact on our community and the children served would be immediate and harsh, because either hours, numbers served, or both would be reduced. Any such scenario would result in kids left unsupervised during the critical hours between 3 and 6 p.m. when their working parents arrive home. Inevitably, many of these kids will find their way into negative behavior choices and the consequences. By retaining the current allocation of youth investment funds, Kids Club will continue to receive these dollars and provide this critical service to our community's children. In conclusion, on behalf of Jefferson County and Central Oregon, I would like to state my support of HB 2392 with the amendment submitted by Representative Clem, and urge each of you to support it as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minda. Thank you for all the work that you guys do. This is really wonderful to hear about. Thank you. So now, I think, is there anybody else who's traveled over 100 miles that we didn't sign up here? Okay, we'll start at the beginning. Janet Carlson, right? Although I can't read your writing, Janet.
It's not my
mom. Oh. Oh. And somebody, Kelly. And Susan.
Kelly.
Something from Tiger Tualatin School District. Go ahead.
All right. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am Janet Carlson, Commissioner from Marion County. I want to thank you for this opportunity to discuss House Bill 2395, and I want to thank Representative Clem for submitting the bill to open up this policy conversation. As he said at the outset, really House Bill 4165 was about early learning, and then later on the Youth Development Commission portion was tacked on with quite a bit less policy conversation and quite a bit less direction. The early learning initiative, counties have been very supportive of that. In many counties, we've been conveners of the groups that are going to fold into the regional hubs. And so what we're doing is, from a policy level, is moving from a state-county system to a state-regional system. With the Youth Development Council, we have a state system, but there's no corollary local or regional counterpart to give that input. So what this is not about is retaining local commissions under some other name. We're very supportive of the governor's direction. It's not about a lack of alignment for outcomes. We're very supportive of moving to educational outcomes. It is about adding a role for local inclusion, community-based inclusion, and a concern that there are programs all over the state of Oregon that have been funded with monies that now go to the Youth Development Council, and they will end on July 1, 2013 without a transition plan. And the governor has created a transition plan for early learning. So this is kind of a mismatch, I guess, in terms of how the two were rolled out. You'll see in the letter that I've provided that that our Association of Oregon Counties adopted some principles. This bill aligns with our principles. Also, you'll see some amendments that we worked with Representative Clem to send to Legislative Council that weren't available yet today. They went in on the 7th of February, but you see what we sent them. I don't know what will come back, but that is what we sent them. You received some letters from county commissioners that have been named already, and Commissioner Bill Hall from Lincoln County couldn't be here. Commissioner Greg Malinowski may be on his way from Washington County, but he wanted to testify today. Commissioner Fisher from Columbia County is a former school superintendent and is supportive of the bill. And you'll note that in...
Your time is up. I'm sorry. I'm trying to keep her left.
All right. So, thank you very much.
To my other vice chair. So I'm sorry to stop you so quickly.
All right.
We do have your materials.
All right,
and you
great.
Know we'll look at them.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Chair Tomei and members of the committee. My name is Allison Kelly, and I'm the Community Services Department Director for Marion County. And I did submit written testimony and also sent that electronically, so hopefully you have that. I'm here today in support of House Bill 2392 and the opportunity it provides to engage in a dialogue. And I really have one point to make. There are many points in the bill, but one point has to do with some tension I think Representative Clem referred to. It's emerging tension around the difference between an equitable allocation formula across the state versus a competitive grant approach. And I just want to tell you a quick Marion County story. We are talking about these youth investment dollars. In 2011, with the new governor and with the new emphasis on K through 20 educational attainment and helping kids be ready for the workforce, which we have supported for years in Marion County, we saw the writing on the wall. And our county and our commission, we switched our funding formula for those funds to a modified competitive grant model. And I'm here to say that while that addressed some issues, we've seen an unintended consequence from that, and that is that it has made it difficult for some smaller areas that are already underserved and under-resourced to apply. It's difficult for under-resourced areas to divert the people power and the resources to write a good grant. It's what an economist would call a transaction cost. And so what we've seen, and you'll hear from a man by the name of Joe Zare in written testimony from Jefferson, Oregon, about already the closing of their middle school program. And that's due to loss of funding, and that really tells the story of how difficult it is. And these funds in Marion County, we are in our new model funding after school programs, things that are aligned with supporting student success and educational attainment. We have strong providers, but I just wanted to call that particular point to your attention.
Thank you. I'm sorry to have to do this, but there are so many people. Yes.
I know we're under constraint. I'm going to go. Have to go to another committee. Are we going to have a quick chance for a question now of these two?
Quick.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do appreciate both of you being here. And I appreciate that you said this is not about going backwards. And we're all part of that huge, giant bill that we went through, the Early Learning Council. But this, to me, is a refinement of an important part. So I get the part about the makeup of the council. I think that these are good suggestions. But my question to you is part of your concern the fact that the very idea of trying for fairness in a competitive situation could have the reverse effect, particularly Marion County may or may not be in this situation, particularly in those counties that we're concerned about that don't have the infrastructure to do the kind of competitive grant making that you need to do. Is that part of your concern?
Seconds before.
Madam Chair, Representative Gilliam, yes, absolutely. And I think I chaired the Association of Oregon County's Human Services Steering Committee last year. The principle that I put in my testimony came out of that group. And it's primarily around the fact that if it's a competitive grant process and it goes to several nonprofits in the state of Oregon, the question is, does the impact of them then reach rural Oregon? Does it reach those underserved areas? And as you know, you come from Silverton, and they've had a very strong program there.
Yes.
But they rely a lot on resources. There's not a lot from the community that they can do to come up with that. So it's important for us to be able to share those resources.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
Hi, I'm Susan Stark Hayden, and I actually live in your district, Representative Tomei.
Oh, good.
I work for Tiger Twelton Schools, and I'm here in support on behalf of HB 2392. And the main things I want to talk about is that we have two great programs that are in place, and especially our Family Resource Center, where we have two great staff members who don't know whether they're going to have jobs. And because we don't know what's going to happen with their funding. We sit around in the administrative cabinet at the school district, and we talk about the programs that are currently grant-funded and how we're going to pay for them this next year when it looks like we may need to cut as little as $4 million and as much as $9 million out of our district budget. So programs that we love, if we're going to fund them, that means we're going to have to cut other programs that we love. And, you know, $9 million is a lot of teachers or a lot of school days. And so what we're worried about is losing programs that we've had for 20 years, which is the Family Resource Center. Our middle school after-school activity program has kept kids out of trouble. We have kids who, because teachers have gone the extra mile and bought shoes for them so they could participate in track, and bought singlets for them so they could participate in the wrestling team, have all of a sudden connected to school and gone away from potentially being gang involved or trouble involved. And we want to be able to keep those programs in place. And so we would minimum like to have a transition program so that at least we know they're funded till January. And then we hope that the program, the outcome of it is that we're able to have similar kinds of programs when you're done and the funding stream changes.
Thank you, Susan. Thanks for the work you do. Thank you all. Thank you. Now we'll hear from, oh my God, Greg, somebody. Did I hear from, no, that's wrong. Lynn Schneider? Who wrote these?
Schroeder.
Who wrote these? You've got to take responsibility. Oh, you are very guilty. William Thomas, is that right? William.
Yeah.
We sent him back to grade school. Christina McMahon? From somebody. Okay, good. Okay. I see some familiar faces. Thank you for coming. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Tomei and committee members. My name is Lynn Schroeder, and I'm the director of the Washington County Juvenile Department. And I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2392 as amended. There's 4 points I would like to make. And the first one is that the current structure for that developed the plans in the counties for distribution of these funds, and each county sat down and developed a plan and where the gaps were, how to prevent juvenile crime, how to support youth success in school, increase retention. And that current plan system is working. In fact, in Washington County, we have a middle school program that's supported by these funds, and 91% of the youth who are medium and high risk were averted from the juvenile justice system. Youth in the high school program that were supported who were at risk for dropping out, 88% retained in school. And referrals in high school youth also were decreased by 71%. So these services are being effective. My second point is, please establish equitable distribution. All counties and youth deserve the same distribution of funds and access to those funds. Third, please target criminogenic risk factors. We know that this is research-based, it's proven, it's effective, it decreases delinquency, it decreases gang involvement, it increases success in school, and it decreases the use of costly incarceration. Washington County currently is underutilizing Oregon Youth Authority beds by up to 40% regularly. And between 1999 and 2011, juvenile crime in Washington County reduced by 28%. At the same time, youth population went up 35%. And this is because that's when we started this plan and started allocating these funds that came to the community. And the last is, please establish county and tribal representation. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Greg Malinowski has arrived. If you would call him, and he is sitting here right now, if he could join us.
You want him to join you here?
Please.
Okay, sure.
County Commissioner from Washington County.
Sorry, Commissioner, we're only giving 2 minutes, and we have a timekeeper here who's very cool. He will give you a hand signal when your time is up. So at what order do you want to do this? Okay, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. My name is Greg Malinowski, Washington County Commissioner, District 2, also a member of the Washington County Children and Families Board. Just wanted to say thank you. This the House bill you're talking about today is very, very important to us, to, and especially with Representative Clem's changes to it, to try and keep our program functioning. We understand the need to revamp the program and the situation down here in Salem, sending money out to us. Our group has been extremely successful in taking the $400,000+ that we get from you and braiding it in through other programs from state and federal levels. We have a local group of volunteers and people who are experienced in working with these kids. We have a lot of kids, as it mentions, you may have heard already, 136,000. And we are able to go ahead and use the connections we have to go ahead and manage and take care of these kids. Now, some of what we've heard in the past is, well, don't worry, we're going to contract it, have a nice day. Well, it is critical that the legislature step in and tell the folks that, by golly, we need those funds to continue. That when you have kids in programs, you can't tell them to take 6 months off, and we're not going to cover you for 6 months. And it's not just the kids that are in trouble. It's children at risk. We have a drug problem with some of our children now in high school, and they're not the ones on drugs. It's the parents on drugs. And these kids are working hard to be successful, but they may come from a background where they'll be the first ones to go to college and higher education. And so while we're taking care of the kids that are really in trouble, we don't want to lose these kids that are left behind. And it is just critical for us that you folks step in and say, no, we're not going to turn the switch off and wait 6 months and turn it on. Thank you. It won't work with a ventilator. It certainly won't work with kids that are trying to do what they can to squeak through. I thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, and thank you for coming here today. And could you make sure that this gentleman gets a handwriting course? We really
Chair Tomei, my name is Bill Thomas. I'm director of the Washington County Commission on Children and Families, and I'm appearing on behalf of the Department of Health and Human Services for Washington County. I apologize for the poor handwriting. I had a stroke in September.
I'm sorry.
I was left with two impediments. One is speech, so I don't speak as clearly as I used to, and I apologize for that. And I certainly don't write as well, which was never very good in the first place. So I apologize for being the one to ask to sign everybody up. I'm just glad to be here today, and I have submitted written testimony, and I've also submitted written testimony from Judy Harris, who is the Executive Director of Youth Contact, one of our large nonprofits in Washington County that serves kids throughout all of our 7 school districts. They use both youth and crime prevention funds to do middle school programs and youth investment funds to do programs for high school students. Our commission and our department supports the passage of 2392 with the amendments that have been sent to the Legislative Council because we believe it is important to provide clear legislative direction, expectations, and mandates for the Youth Development Council in the same way as Representative Clem mentioned that was done for the Early Learning Council in the last session. We believe that this bill is important to ensure the continuity of very effective community-based services throughout Washington County. You heard some of that Susan Stark-Hayden mentioned after-school programs, family resource centers, student retention programs. We have 136 kids in Washington County. It's a lot of kids. 60,000 of them are minority kids. 38,000 of those 60,000 are Hispanic children and youth. We've got a big job to do. We cannot afford to have funds removed from our county and the system that we have developed dismantled. That is the reason that we're concerned, because these juvenile crime prevention funds and youth investment funds have been going to counties for over since 1978, the passage of the Juvenile Service Commission Act. That's a long time. We've developed a unified system. And while it may be underfunded, it is not broken. It is working well. We believe through passage of this bill, you can ensure that there would be continue to be an equitable distribution of funds that would address all of the services that I've attached in my testimony. But without that, we are concerned that those contracts and performance-based services would be at risk for the 13-15 biennium. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and I'm sorry if I teased you.
You did. It's not a problem.
Okay. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Chair Tomei and members of the committee. My name is Christina McMahon. I am here wearing two hats today. I'm representing the Oregon Juvenile Department Directors Association, and I'm also, when I'm finished doing that, I'll save my last minute for Multnomah County, where I serve as the Juvenile Services Division Director for the Department of Community Justice. I don't want to repeat everything my colleague Lynn Schroeder said. I think she did a wonderful job capturing the sentiments of the Oregon Juvenile Department Directors Association. We do support this bill. We also support the pending amendments that are out there for this bill. We think that it's very important that the bill emphasizes funding for prevention and intervention programs that target criminogenic risk factors that lead to delinquency. We are happy that that language was added. We also think it's very important that the geographic diversity and the tribes have the recognition throughout the state that they deserve. So we are in support. The juvenile directors would like to advocate for, people are referring to it as an equitable funding formula. We would like to advocate for a continuation of the population-based and minimum grant formula to ensure that all counties get funding to maintain the important programs and services that they are doing. Some of those include restorative justice-based programs, school mentoring connections, truancy programs, treatment. Now I'll segue and put on my Multnomah hat. In Multnomah County, we agree with the support of House Bill 2392. We especially are concerned about the overrepresentation of youth of color in our community. And in Multnomah County, we use the funding from this funding stream that is going to be overseen by the Youth Development Council, the Juvenile Crime Prevention Funds. We use that to fund our Assessment and Treatment for Youth and Families program. That serves 70% of the youth that are served by that program are youth of color. So we're very concerned about maintaining this important program that has had wonderful outcomes. And I have submitted written testimony that goes into quite a bit of detail on this. So
thank
I appreciate
you so
your
much.
Time.
You bet. Thank you all for coming. Thanks thank for the work you do.
Iris Bell, I see you here. Do you want to speak at this time, or do you want to wait until the end?
Well, I would come forward. I know that folks have signed up. If everyone's going to be here at the end, I would wait.
It's your choice.
Okay. Well, perhaps I should go now. So let me hand this out. Good afternoon, Chair Tomei, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. My name is Iris Bell, and I'm the Director of the Youth Development Council. What is getting ready to be handed out to you is a little bit of a description of the duties and responsibilities of the council, a roster of council membership, and areas of work that have been identified for the council as a result of House Bill 4165. Now, as you know, House Bill 4165 said that was created so that the Youth Development Council could support the Oregon Education Investment Board. And they were going to support the board in a manner that actually supported academic success, reduced criminal involvement, and here's an important part. They did that in a way that was integrated, measurable, and accountable. That's what we're trying to achieve. We're looking at school-age kids through 20 as in the purview of the council itself. We have designed a strategic plan. We've defined metrics for that plan that align with the Oregon Education Investment Board. But with respect to the House bill itself, we have a very neutral position with one caveat. And it's a very, very significant caveat. And that caveat is that there should be targeted, focused investments that support academic success and reduce criminal involvement, both through programs that are practice-based and evidence-based. But even more important than that, we think that there should be targeted performance-based criteria within any formula developed for this bill. And we say that because there's a need to ensure the alignment of our investments with the Oregon Education Investment Board. Now, the alignment of those investments would suggest that we would have more than just one avenue in which folks would be able to access funding for communities. There would be targeted investments, there would be the identification of successful programs, and there would be allocation formulas. So none of that was intended to ever go away. And then I just need to make one more correction. Many folks testified that the Title 20 funds would be impacted by the gang programs. The governor put an additional $1 million in his budget for gangs. Title 20 funds will not be impacted by any of the gang funds. So thank you very much.
Thank you for that question. That's great. Any quick questions of Iris before she leaves us? Okay, and stick around because we may have a question later on, but we do have one right now.
Madam Chair, will Mrs. Bell be coming back?
We're gonna yes. Well, and you're based here in Salem, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
We can invite her
just
back.
Wait and talk about one.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Iris. I appreciate that. Okay, so next we have Karen Nibbler. Eric Johnston and Mike Ainsworth.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Should I go start?
Sure.
My name is Karen Nibbler. I represent the League of Women Voters, and I did send a letter earlier if you received it.
Yes.
And the League feels very strongly about prevention programs, and so that's why we wanted to come forth and encourage the continued support of intervention programs. And we're particularly concerned about the funding continuing some of the services that are happening right now. Because we have a lot of good programs, and we want to keep some stability in these programs and maintain them. And I'm from Corvallis, and I'm also on the Benton County Commission. I served for 6 years. So we spent money on tutoring and mentoring, and one particular program was our relief or our shelter program. And it's very expensive to run a shelter program because you have to have 24-hour staff. So we need to keep that place open, and it saves a lot of kids. And I kind of look at it as a teen prevention program, or teen pregnancy prevention program. So, we're very concerned about keeping this place going. And also, they're working over in Linn County. They're doing an outreach program over in Linn County to start working with their kids. And they're looking for a shelter house over there, too. So this is our interest in keeping these programs going.
Thank you.
My name is Eric Johnston. I'm the executive director and founder of a nonprofit in Clackamas County that provides community-based services, and it's called Todos Juntos. And I'm here to speak on a system of care developed through the Clackamas County Children, Youth, and Families Division in Clackamas County. As you and other elected officials consider ways to align government spending with emerging realities, I believe that I have some encouraging news, at least concerning continuation of funding of programs through the Oregon Education Investment Board's Early Learning Council and Youth Development Council funding streams. Although I am executive director of a nonprofit organization called Todos Juntos that currently provides services to over 1,600 youth and families, I am today riding as a representative of several groups of public and private agencies in rural Clackamas County. Since I started Todos Juntos in 1994, the planning and implementation of our programs has been done through a system of care called PreventNet. PreventNet is a proven model in which community-based organizations work with local schools to provide a basis of delivery for preventions and interventions that target youth identified as high risk, as well as academic enrichment, recreation, and other school program open for all youth to participate. These standard school-based services are delivered at 10 PreventNet sites, are provided at no cost to over 12,000 program participants, parents, as well as youth countywide, and are strategically placed to serve gang-affected youth and those children at risk of academic failure. The PreventNet model calls for local school-based oversight committees to lead in convening Todos Juntos and other community-based service providers toward a collaborative plan and implementation of integrated programs.
ProvendNet services are provided to youth by building on their strengths and competencies and by incorporating the strengths and competencies of Todos Juntos and our partners. The ProvendNet model is based on research described in a comprehensive 2002 study of Extended Services Schools Initiative, which supported the creation of 60 after-school programs in 20 communities around the country. Students who participated in these ESI initiatives experienced positive change in four key areas: staying out of trouble, improving school attitudes and behavior, strengthening social networks, and learning new skills, seeing new possibilities, improving self-confidence. Todos Juntos.
30 seconds.
30 seconds?
Two.
Oh, really?
Two seconds.
Ten
seconds.
Oh, ten.
Okay.
I'll go to the back page. Yeah. Many of our programs currently serve middle and elementary schools and can be easily modified to address any new legislation regarding early learning or high school graduation rate. My request is that we, the partners who support at-risk youth and families on their way to academic and social achievement, be allowed to continue these important endeavors. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was great.
Madam Chair, committee members, I'm Polk County Commissioner Mike Ainsworth, and on behalf of the other commissioners in Polk County, we are great supporters of House Bill 2392 as amended. We hope that this bill will ensure the equitable and fair distribution of youth development and prevention funds in all parts of Oregon. In Polk County, just to name a few of these funding areas that this money serves. Sanctioned Court, it's a primary diversion program covering five areas in the county: Monmouth, Independence, Dallas, West Salem, and the Grand Round area. The Sanctioned Court process provides an opportunity for face-to-face contact with every first-time youth offender in the county and their parents. Thereby, it decreases the recidivism rate. In 2008, the successful rate of recidivism with sanctioned court was 95.7%. That meant that 95% of them never came back, which is a great success. I don't care where you're at. That's great. Also, Polk County Service Integration Programs provide coordinated community resources and information to not only families, but youth and individuals in Polk County. You know, some of the examples for service integration services are, you know, paying for sports fees, providing books, tuition for a number of extracurricular activities, and school supplies. And also in Polk County, we started a mentoring program initially in Dallas, Oregon. We mentor about 25 kids in the fifth grade, and it provides positive role models for these young people, because let's be realistic, not all kids have the same opportunity that we have. A lot of kids are with single parents. Their parents are doing the best job they can, but it's nice to have a role model. And over 100 community partners serve and support our Polk County Sanctioned Court, along with service integration and the mentoring programs. And hundreds of more youth are involved and helped through those programs. And we're here just to hope that you would, there's my 10 seconds, because I'm on Sanctioned Court. I deal with it about five or six times a month. We deal with about 50 kids a month, and it's great that 95% of those kids don't come back, because our youth are the most important asset that we have as we move forward.
Thank you so much. Thank you all. So Jennifer Forsman, Tammin Wallace, and Janet Ahrens, and Sam Skillen is going to be our last person, and Iris, we might pull you back up. So how are we doing on time? We're not bad. Okay, just go ahead right ahead.
Good afternoon, Chairman Tomei and members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Forsman. I work for Northwest Family Services, and I'm a PreventNet site coordinator at Gardner Middle School in Oregon City in Clackamas County. You just heard from Mr. Johnston about PreventNet, but I'm just here to tell you a little bit more. I do case coordination with high-risk youth at the school, and we also run after-school programs. I have, and my colleagues have, the same situation at each of their schools. We have hundreds of students that we serve in our after-school programs. I'm not exaggerating. We have so many kids, we just don't even know what to do with them. And we also have the opportunity to work with a number of kids who are the highest flyers in the school. As you guys know, education cuts have come down and come down and come down. And so in our school, we have almost 900 students, and we have one full-time counselor and one part-time counselor. Pretty much they just do scheduling. They don't have the opportunity to spend the time with kids who really need it, who are going to fall through the cracks. That's where we come in. And over and over and over, our principal and our vice principal and our counselors tell me, I don't know what we would do without you and without your programs, because we work with these kids. I have one student that I've been spending a lot of time with recently who is currently in foster care because her mom has mental health issues. Her dad is an alcoholic, and he was abusive to her. And I have been the person who can sit there with her, who goes with her yesterday when she needed help talking to a teacher because she was worried about her grade. I went in with her. I have another family who I've been working with whose father was arrested on Christmas Eve for sodomy, and nobody has time to work on helping this family get connected with resources, and so that's where I step in. And if these programs don't have this kind of funding, there's nobody to fill in this gap. So we are definitely in favor of this bill, and we appreciate you listening to what we have to say about it. We just really hope that you'll consider making sure that that funding is kept in place for prevention and not just intervention, because we do really focus on decreasing your risk factors and increasing protective factors with these kids. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. Again, I'm honored. My name is Tamal, and I am the prevention specialist. I work at Clackamas County, at Rex Putnam High School, as well as Alder Creek Middle School.
Could you tell us your last name?
It's Waritu, W-A-R-I-T-U.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so so I just wanted to emphasize how important this bill is, and how I think to look at, and also there's, I know there's a lot of emphasis on decreasing the dropout, especially in high school. And this is, like she mentioned, there is an issue of this the high number of dropout bulls statewide as well as locally. And if you look deep into this issue, we find that most of the students who are at risk of dropping out are those that come from family with no background in education, as well as those who is a low socioeconomic status. So we have the privilege to work with these type of students, where in a lot of schools you have counselors 500-to-1 ratio. So we have the opportunity to work one-on-one with these students and help them realize about the potential they have. Just to give one example, I have a student, a Latino student whom I'm working with a single mom, and he was charged for DUI just a couple of months ago before I started working with him, and he never had the motivation. But now, since I started working with him, we started talking about college and about basically generally his life and what he should do with his life. And now he's really motivated, and I can see his grades changing gradually. So these are the kind of things that we're doing in the ground level. So I hope, I'm glad that you guys are working on this bill, and I hope, something happens.
We also just want to let you know that our office is located in your district, Chairman Tamui, and all of you are welcome to come and visit our programs and
check
out anytime. Our office is in Milwaukee.
Where?
On King Road in Linwood.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Thank you both.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, Janet, go ahead. Why don't you wait a minute until Janet speaks?
Thank you, Chair Tomei and committee members. My name is Janet Ahrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs. We are a statewide nonprofit representing $205 million worth of services to children and families. That would be about 100,000 children every year that we work with. We asked the governor for an appointment to a slot on the council seat because of the breadth of services that we represent, the breadth of the population, and the needs of those children and youth and their families. And because we're a statewide organization and we saw the opportunity for work on the council that represented an array of services for all children throughout the state, and that's a philosophy that we believe is pretty fundamental in our organization. We also recognize some of the challenges with the current community services. Our members not only collaborate with counties and local commissions, but they also contract with them. So I do understand some of the issues, and I do think that a planful transition is helpful. And we just wanted, it was really very nice to be able to be here and hear all the good work that's doing. Some of my programs are represented here, and the Alliance is looking forward to our continued work on the Council to support kids in Oregon.
Thank you, Janet. Thank you all. I think that's our last speaker. Thank you all for all the great work you've done.
it's one of the nice parts of being on this committee is hearing from people throughout the state who are doing wonderful things for our children. So thank you for all that you do. Thank you for coming today, especially for those of you who've traveled over 100 miles. We really appreciate it. Iris, would you mind staying? We have two. I'm going to close this hearing. If Representative Wisnett, would you be willing to have Iris stay until we hear those other two bills? If we've got time, we'll hear from you now. If not, we'll ask her to come back another day.
I'll be here, ma'am.
All right. So I'm with that, and I'm going to ask you what?
Did you want to mention that letter of support from
Representative Thompson? Oh, we have a letter of support from Representative Thompson also. So I'm going to be closing this and ask you to leave quietly because we've only got 45 minutes to hear two more bills. So thank you so much. And with that, I will close the hearing, Human Services hearing on House Bill 2392. Thank you again. With that, we will open up the hearing on House Bill 2350. House Bill 2350 requires the Director of the Department of Human Services to create or incorporate into an existing survey questions about teen dating violence, establishes a teen dating violence study fund, directs Oregon Health Authority in consult with the Department of Human Services to conduct study of teen dating violence if sufficient funds are collected from the teen dating violence study fund. This bill has no revenue impact, and it may have a fiscal impact, and the statement has not yet been issued. Okay, great. Representative Bailey, thanks for coming today. I like this touch. Yeah.
Good color. All cool kids are wearing purple, Mr. Vice Chair. And Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jules Bailey. I have the honor of representing House District 42, and pleased to bring before you a concept that is a continuation and the next step, really, in a concept that this committee dug into and passed in the last session with your help and support, Chair, and that passed the House on a nearly unanimous vote and is now law, and that was the Healthy Teen Relationship Act. As part of the Healthy Teen Relationship Act, the next step to this process is to examine the kinds of interventions that schools are making and to understand better how those relate to best practices in terms of how we teach and educate our children and students about what it means to be in a safe environment in schools and what it means to have safe and healthy relationships. I'm sure you are all too aware of instances in your own districts where we have had a really, really tragic story from across the state of young women, especially, who have been in situations in which they have been not just physically hurt and in some cases tragically killed, but who have been the victims of things that are sometimes less physical, that lead to mental and social challenges, that lead to decreased performance in school, that lead to patterns of potentially drug use and other destructive behavior. And so what we're looking to do is to start early to break that cycle of violence and of control. And in this bill, what we're asking to do is to, one, try to collect some data on the extent of this problem through the existing Healthy Teen Survey by adding a module on to the Healthy Teen Survey. And then two, to work with foundations actually that have expressed interest in putting support into the kinds of work that Oregon is doing in recognition of the groundbreaking policy that we've passed to be able to help us fund a longitudinal study to measure outcomes and develop those kinds of best practices. Now, the bill that you have before you, I will tell you, needs some work. It was drafted off of a concept that was an older concept from a session or two ago. We've been working on this for a while. And so you may hear from some folks about a few challenges that are in the structure of the current bill. For example, it refers to DHS when it should be referring to OHA and not DHS. There's a reference to the structure of court fees in there that is now no longer relevant with the restructuring of how we do those fees in the last legislative session. So there are a few technical items that need to change, but the overall thrust of the bill is the same, and would hope to have your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Any quick questions of Representative Bailey? Thank you so much. So we have a panel. Kirsten Heidel, is that right? And Nikki Tetz. I never pronounce that right, Nikki. And we'll also bring up Karen Milder.
Nibbler.
Well.
I know
her too. That is what that says. I'm having trouble reading writing today. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Nikki Terziev. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. Just a very heartfelt thank you for Representative Bailey and his co-sponsors for bringing this together, and for you, Madam Chair, and members of this committee for having us here to have this discussion and hopefully take the next step in what is a really critical piece of policy for the future of the children in Oregon. Just very briefly, the Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence is over 50 nonprofit community-based shelters, crisis centers, crisis lines. We do the hard work of meeting folks at the door, making sure they have emergency medical assistance, legal advocacy, medical advocacy, accessing shelter space when available. And who we have here today is Kirsten Heidel, and she is with the Mid-Valley Women's Crisis Service. And they're here in Salem, and she does work as the youth... Help me out. Youth Services Coordinator. Thank you. Youth Services Coordinator. I mean, she's in the schools, and she's traveling around and speaking with these students who are directly affected by the violence, both at home and in their own interpersonal relationships. And so I'll let you hear from the certified smart person.
Thank you, Nikki.
Chair Tomei, Vice Chair Gomberg, Vice Chair Olson, and members of the committee. My name is Kirsten Heidel. I'm the Youth Services Coordinator and Youth Advocate for Mid-Valley Women's Crisis Service. Mid-Valley Women's Crisis Service works with victims and survivors of teen dating violence, domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, and human trafficking. We've been serving the Marion County area since 1973, and our organization is one of the oldest of its kind in Oregon. I'm here today in support of the House Bill 2350 because teen dating violence is so much more common than adults and schools recognize. It's so prevalent, and I think that even youth that I work with don't even recognize that they've been in an abusive relationship until they've received the proper education. I work with a lot of our shelter youth. I work with a lot of walk-ins, a lot of youth that are out in the community, and I talk a lot in the school, so I come in contact with a lot of youth. And I would say primarily most of the youth that I work with have been victims of teen dating violence or sexual assault by an intimate partner. Like I said, I go into the schools a lot, and I talk about various issues. I talk about teen dating violence, oppression, the roots of violence, sexual assault, consent, even pornography, and it's linked towards sexual violence. And teachers, just this past semester in the fall, I had to turn teachers away because they had students that were saying, we need more education, we want more of this. It's so incredibly important. Usually I would go in for 4 or 5 days, and when I would present on teen dating violence or sexual assault, almost every single class period, I would have one or two students that would ask to talk to me and say, I'm in an abusive relationship right now. I need help. I've been victimized before. I need help. I have a friend who's being victimized right now. What do I do to help them? It's so incredibly important. There have been a few teachers that have been amazing, and after I come in and present, they have their students write me letters, notes, and then they mail those back. I probably have over 1,000 notes from students, and I sent just a couple of those quotes, just a very few. I have lots of other ones that really illustrate how important these youth think all of this is and want more education like this. I was actually at an event the other day, and a girl that was in one of these classes came up to me and said, thank you so much. She said, you saved my life. I was in an abusive relationship, and I'm not anymore because of you. And it's not because of me. It's because of the education that they're receiving. I feel privileged to be able to work with these youth and relay that information. A lot of times people think that it's not really that big of an issue, or that it's just petty arguing. I'm working with youth who have been hit, punched, strangled, slapped. I was working with a girl. She was 13, and she was dating a boyfriend, super charming in the beginning, obviously, and the relationship became very physical. He was very physically abusive, emotionally abusive, and he coerced her into having sex before she was comfortable with it, and she ended up getting pregnant. She didn't want to keep the baby, and he said, if you don't keep it, I'm going to hurt you, so she ended up keeping it, and as she was a few months along in the pregnancy, she got really excited and wanted to keep the baby, and at that point, he said, no, I don't want you to have the baby, because he knew that was the most, that was a huge form of power. And so one night he got really, became very abusive and strangled her and punched her in the stomach to the point where she miscarried. And she came to me and she was like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get out. I'm really afraid. He's involved in a gang. I'm afraid he's going to kill me. Another girl that I worked with, she was 12. She was sexually assaulted by her boyfriend. She broke up with her boyfriend. So this is middle school. She was, I believe, a seventh grader at the time. She became pregnant, broke up with him, obviously, and he went around the school and he told everybody that she was a slut and she was a whore. People harassed her so much. She carried the baby full term, lost the child, it was a stillbirth, and the harassment became so bad that she had to transfer to a school that was 90 miles away. And that didn't even keep her safe because we know Facebook, the internet, people in that school started to harass her. And when I came in contact with her, she said, all I want is for the bullying to stop. I want the name calling to stop. All I want is to be able to live like a person. And she can't go around and say, yeah, my boyfriend sexually assaulted me. That's such a personal and intimate thing to share with anyone. So I just want to urge support for this bill. I think that youth deserves to have more education. Youth, I think that Oregon needs to know how prevalent it is. And by passing this legislation, Oregon would be the leader in showing the nation how much we care about our youth. So I'm here to advocate on behalf of the youth who are suffering at this point in silence. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have about the impact of this legislation on victims and survivors.
Thank you so much.
Karen Nibbler, I'm representing Legal Women Voters. But I also had a background in working with a juvenile, the kids that were in trouble, and I had a lot of girls on my caseload. And so I know exactly what she's talking about because I had a lot of girls who were in those situations where they were abused or had a power trip with their boyfriend. And some of the situations that she's describing are crimes. You know, it's the strangling, you know, and assaults and harassment and all that. Those are crimes. But the girls don't want to report them. They're very reluctant to report. So you really have to work with them to get them to have the strength to report and not be afraid of the consequences. But that's not what I came to say. But and I want to thank her for working with the girls. The League is very much behind violence prevention, and that's one of the things that they would like to encourage. And we did have a survey that DHS did that would ask questions of usually drug and alcohol abuse. And I think they added suicide to that questionnaire recently. And they don't do the questionnaire as often. They used to do it every year, and that's how they judged alcohol and drug use. But they don't do it as often. But adding a question about dating violence, I think, is perfectly appropriate to add to that. And it is, I believe, done by public health probably now because they're in charge of all the prevention programs. So we think that's an appropriate thing would be to have public health expand on that questionnaire and get some data maybe from the kids. And they're more likely to check off something like that when nobody knows who's reading them and you don't have to put your name on it. And so I think we might get a good response from that. The other thing is that I think we need to do intervention on this, because girls that get caught in this situation sometimes think that this is kind of the normal relationship with a guy, and so they're kind of like precursors to the adult domestic violence situations. So I think, you know, we want to get in and work with these kids so that they learn what healthy relationships are, and try to do some education around what is a healthy relationship, and then also, you know, for them to report if they get into one of these relationships. But mostly it's going to be assertiveness so that they don't get caught in this situation. So those are the things that I responded to when I saw this bill. But I was concerned about this bill asking to have a fee put on the court, because public safety ways and means in the last few sessions revised the court fee structure, and they streamlined it and combined it so that they didn't have all these little fees tagged onto it, so that there's a flat fee now for court fees for coming in for a case, or also I think for probation and things like that. There's just flat fees. So I would hate to get in and starting adding more fees again, since they have just cleaned up the fee structure in the court system. So I would suggest that rather than do that, that they go for grant money or something, or foundation money, and that would be the better way to do it. And I think last session, didn't we have a maternal health bill and public health, and they ended up going for grants?
Yeah.
So I think this would be an appropriate way to go with this.
Okay. Thank you very much, Karen. Thank you, Bob.
Yeah. Chair, if you don't mind, I'd be remiss if I just didn't alert you all to the good work that's already kind of been done in this realm with the last iteration of the Healthy Teen Relationship Act. The Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence has been able to get into school districts and start working. We actually sat down with the School Board Association policy writers and looked at the policies that they wrote around anti-bullying and crafted some specific language around domestic violence and healthy teen relationships and intimate partner violence. So this work can be built upon and can progress, and would really encourage you all to take this up, and with or without any kind of fiscal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And we have, yes.
What, can I make a comment?
Could you wait until we have last testimony? Marcia Kelly, and then colleagues, I think everybody's been passed out a letter from Carrie Naughton at the Crime Survivors Program, and one from Sybil Hebb, who is also here. I saw her, didn't I? Yeah. You didn't want to speak, Sybil? You just had your letter? Okay, great. In support of this. And League of Women Voters. Good. Okay. Marcia.
Chair Tomei and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm the public policy advocate for the American Association of University Women of Oregon. We're a membership organization for the new members that I've never spoken before, of people, not just necessarily women, people who have associate degrees or higher from colleges and universities. We have about 2,000 members in Oregon, so we have members in Enterprise and LeGrand, as well as Lakeview. I like to say that because so many times organizations are concentrated just down the I-5 corridor. The Association of AEW has done studies on bullying in school on a national basis and research, and research can always inform good preventative programs. So we are supportive of this bill and the concept. I would like to point out, however, that in the current teen study, they have two studies. They have an 8th grade study and they have an 11th grade study in 2013 that the Public Health Division does. And they only ask questions regarding teen dating and potential dating violence in the 11th grade study and not in the 8th grade. So if this went forward and to be fiscally responsible, there could potentially be changes made to potential changes to the bill. I have not talked to the bill sponsor, so. But since there's an eighth grade survey and this says seventh grade, potentially we might start getting facts in this constrained economic environment by putting the teen dating violence questions in the seventh grade study as well. I know that schools are supposed to have, you know, ways of dealing with these issues, but an educated statistical study will help inform what's going on, and we can track what our efforts are doing by having the good statistics. So we really would like to see the statistics part, but I think there may be a vehicle that can be already in existence that can be used.
Okay, thank you, Marcia. And you might talk with Representative Bailey about that.
Yeah,
great. Thank you very much. And Representative Kenny Guy, do you have a because we've got one more bill to hear.
Sure, just a quick comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm strongly supportive of this bill. Really happy that we're seeing it again this year in a new form. I would love to see it start earlier, sixth grade, because having had three children that have gone through middle school and high school, I know it starts earlier. You could even argue for it earlier, but I think if you concentrate at least in middle schools, that would be good. And I also had a question about the source of funding. It kind of struck me as somewhat ironic in a way that we would tack on a $5 fee to annulments of marriage, which may result from women trying to get out of an abusive relationship. So, you know, I just wonder about that, if there's another way to do that.
Thank you. Do you have a quick question, Representative?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, I was out of the room testifying in another committee. Did we talk about the funding mechanism for this, not the substance of the bill, but the funding mechanism when I was gone?
We really didn't. And we're not going to be having a work session today.
But we'll have an opportunity to talk about it.
And he did state at the beginning, Representative Bailey did, that there's still work to be done on the bill.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, if there's nothing else, we will close that and I'll close House Bill 2350 and open up House Bill 2388.
Madam Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
And members of the committee, House Bill 2388 appropriates $100,000 from the general fund to the Oregon Department of Administrative Services for establishment of revolving loan fund to aid housing development for veterans or domestic violence victims. It distributes funds to the Oxford Houses of Oregon. There is no revenue impact, and there is a fiscal statement that's been issued.
Thank you. And we have the only person, I think, who was written to talk is Wayne Klein, is that right?
Yes.
Good. Thank you so much for coming today, and thank you for sitting through an hour and a half of testimony.
I'm Wayne Klein, the Executive Director of the Recovery Association. For the past 7 years, we have been providing outreach and support to Oxford Houses of Oregon under a state contract, the ORH contract, $425,000 and change a year. For that, the state gets 475,000 bed nights. So the cost for a bed in this program is about $1 a night. That is because people work. That is because people pay their own expenses. That is because people govern their own houses. All decisions are made in the house meeting. Houses have officers. Officers meet. It's a democratic process. It's a self-supporting process. We had a crisis in 2010 where the mother of one of our star leaders was severely beaten by her domestic partner, and we could not help her because she was not an addict. She could not come into an Oxford house. So, anyway, of the nine people on our staff, seven of us have been Oxford House State Board officers, so we did everything we could. So we came to a discussion with Metropolitan Alliance for the Common Good and a number of churches about what we could do to help female victims of domestic violence using the same model. With the help of Metropolitan Alliance for the Common Good, we opened one house in Clackamas County on this model. Subsequently, we've opened three more. We've also opened four houses with Multnomah County for chronically homeless women with children. We feel that in the past 2.5 years, we have come to a pretty good understanding of the changes in the model that need to be made to accommodate the level of trauma and PTSD that we're seeing in long-term domestic violence and long-term homelessness. 76% of the women in Oxford House are domestic violence survivors, so we were not unaware of the problems. But running separate domestic violence houses obviously makes it more intense.
Could you, I think probably most of us here know what Oxford House is. So you need to do, okay. So you need to start at one
where
of our,
Oxford House is a democratically self-run, self-supporting system of recovery houses for people with substance abuse addiction. It was founded 35 years ago in Silver Springs, Maryland. It has since spread across the country and across the English-speaking world. Oregon, fortunately, has the highest number of Oxford houses per capita of any place in the world. We have a very powerful state association. We have 1,194 beds, 1,200 beds at the moment. It's a three-tier organization. Houses are autonomous, self-supporting, as long as they meet their charter conditions, which is to say that they run democratically, that they expel people who relapse on drugs, and that they're self-supporting. Okay? Most houses, all but three houses of the 154 in the state, are members of chapters, which is a voluntary association of houses, and it does oversight on the houses, helps them, mentors them, tutors them. And then all but one of the chapters are members of the state association, which does oversight on the chapters. We as outreach provide training, mentoring, firefighting, problem solving, institutional memory. But it is a big organization. I mean, we've got 1,194 beds in Oxford House itself. That means we're serving over 3,000 people a year. That means that we've got 300 children living in houses at any given point, and many more who are spending weekends and visiting either fathers or mothers. It's single-sex housing, which is a drawback, but following on domestic violence and what we just heard about violence against young women, you can see our point. It's safe housing. And everyone deserves safe housing. And there are a lot of people in the society who are not getting safe housing. We had 20,000 women who sought domestic violence housing last year who did not get it in Oregon. So we're not the solution to the problem, but we are a part of an approach to the problem. We're housing 64 women who would otherwise be at grave risk in houses that are not restricted to people in addiction. Okay? We'd like to double that. We'd like to take it up to housing 128 people, and then we'd like to add another 64 over the next 2 years. The reason it is so slow is when you open a new house, it takes 90 to 120 days of intense outreach effort, and it takes moving people who have lived in an existing house and are stable in it in to model for the people who are there. The problem with opening houses, and it's always the problem, is getting the cash money for the deposits and to buy the things that you cannot get churches and good people to donate to you, like refrigerators. A house with 8 women needs 4 refrigerators. So there's always a cash outlay. We can get most of the money that's required to open a house through outreach, going and working the community for support. But we need about $5,000 of cash to open a house. And so when we were talking this summer with people, we were talking about what could be done to make this system work better. And the fact is we need about $50,000 in revolving loan fund this year and about $50,000 next year, and then we're done with the need for cash for opening houses.
RAP has been running the state's revolving loan fund set up under the omnibus anti-drug bill of 1988 for the past 6 years. We have never lost a penny. We collect almost all of the late fees. The fund has $180,000 in it, of which $120,000 is unspent. But it can only be used under 42 U.S.C. 300X.25 for houses that are restricted to people with substance abuse. So we've got $120,000 loan fund sitting, $180,000 loan fund sitting around, $120,000 of which is not loaned, which we can't use. We really need $100,000. We don't need it all this year. 50 and 50 would be super, but that would allow us to open 8 houses a year that are not restricted to people who are alcohol and drug addicts.
Mr. Klein, I see you have two representatives here who would also like to speak on this, but what I'd like to do is to invite them to come up. They probably will augment some of what you've said.
Excellent.
Great. No, stay right there. They will. They, sure.
Good to see you. Good to see you.
Did I miss you before, or did you come in as he was speaking? Okay. Okay. Terrific. So, gentlemen, toss a coin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County in the Legislature.
Madam Chair, I'm Dennis Richardson, representing District 4, which is Medford to Grants Pass across the Rogue Valley.
Thank you for coming.
And Madam Chair, if I can lead off, if that's okay, Dennis. Representative Richardson and I, when we took the Ways and Means Committee on our road hearings last year, there was a certain gentleman who came to a number of the hearings. I can't even remember how many, but the hearing in Bend, everywhere we went, it seems this gentleman was there, and he was talking about Oxford houses. And I had been introduced to the concept previously, and I knew they were doing good work, but this gentleman was so persistent about the need for us to expand our view on what Oxford House could accomplish with just a little bit of resource that I think we were both very, very intrigued by the idea. Well, what can we do? Obviously, you get tremendous bang for the buck on this investment. You're helping people change people's lives and stabilize their lives and help them move forward. So when we were both visited this summer on the Oxford House issue by Wayne, that we both wanted to do something positive. And so we have brought this bill forward, and we're very appreciative of your taking the time to consider it, and of course we encourage you, hope that you'll be able to pass it down to Ways and Means, so hopefully we can incorporate it in the budget. But again, it's such a great program with such a great result. It's the design of it is brilliant in terms of the ability to start a house, pay back the revolving loan fund, and to continue to expand. And I love the fact that the homes are democratically organized, that the residents are responsible for making sure that the house operates well, and with their success record, I'm proud to be part of an effort to try to expand the program. And again, I thank you for your time.
Thank you. And if only we knew somebody on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I would like to just add my thoughts on this. The Oxford House model is so impressive to me because you're taking seed money and you're putting it into a living situation that is an average kind of neighborhoods. Normally, if you're really low income, you find yourself in an area where you're afraid to go out at night, and you know it's hard to break out of that. But with this model, they're renting homes that are in stable neighborhoods, and they become part of a community. And then the seed money, you know, they pay it back, and it gets put into the account, and then you can go do another one. And we're talking about $100,000, and then the numbers that we're normally working with, that's not very many zeros, but you can open, what did you say, 80 a year, right? So it'd be 16 new homes in the next 2 years for $100,000, and then that merely is priming the pump to get this started, so it's not just going to be benefiting those that have substance abuse problems, but also vets and those in domestic violence. And it's just a great model, and so we'd like to promote that kind of a model.
Great. Thank you so much.
And Madam Chair, whether private asked, why don't you just put this in the budget? And we could do that. You know, Dennis, we could just simply put it in the budget. But we felt that the legislature as a whole should understand what this program is and help educate all of us in terms of what the potential is for the program and to hopefully to get the support of the full legislature behind this.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Any questions?
I just like to make Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to just make a comment. Thank you so much for putting it in bill form and giving us the opportunity to sign on as sponsors. It's a great program. I'm really happy to see it go beyond the addiction population into domestic violence. So,
thank you, Seth.
Great. Thank you. Any further questions? Okay, I have a question. So, having worked with the population of survivors of domestic violence, I think that's a different population from people who are suffering from alcohol and drug addiction. It seems to me that they're, well, as we were hearing earlier in the testimony about teenagers who are in violent situations. So I'm wondering, I understand there's no counseling in the home, is that correct?
There is no counseling in the home by professional. There's no counseling in the home by professional counselors, although, for instance, in Clackamas County, we're working with Clackamas Women's Services to bring counseling into the home as needed. The community, the domestic violence community is very responsive to helping with these sorts of things. But this is about learning how to live. And this is about recovery. It's not about the acute phase of a problem. You've got, well, at the moment you have zero openings in shelters in Portland, but people come out of shelters rather rapidly, and they need a safe place to go where they have a peer group who will support their needs, understand their needs, and go with them on those needs and get through them. Oxford House saved my life, literally, because I was there with a group of people who understood where I was.
And how long would women be staying in the house?
Well, there's no limit on how long people stay. 2 years is where most people leave, because their lives are back together to a point where they have a job and they have other opportunities. But we do have people who stay in Oxford houses for the rest of their lives and die there.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So, I mean, it's permanent housing, mm-hmm. but like renting an apartment, you're not going to be there probably for the rest of your life.
I'll just ask one more question, then I get to you. So how many people would live in one house?
Usually eight.
Eight?
Six to nine, but eight's the optimal level for keeping the rent low and still having enough jobs for people to everybody have a position in the house.
I was wondering if...
Thank you. Got it.
I was wondering if every county in the state has an Oxford House.
No, unfortunately not. During the Great Recession, we lost our three houses in Umatilla County. We lost our house in Klamath County, and they are gone. We have Clatsop, Columbia, Yamhill, Latry County, Marion, Lynn, Benton, Lane, Coos, Jackson, Josephine, Douglas, and Deschutes at this point. And we would like to get back. I'm not sure that we'll ever make it to Ontario with an organization based out of the Valley. I think that almost needs a separate organization, but we desperately want to get back to Umatilla County.
So help us understand what effect the economy had on the
houses. These are democratically self-run, self-supporting houses.
Oh, and they lose jobs.
So if you don't have a job, when unemployment went to 16% in Umatilla County, we could have, I suppose, come to the legislature and asked for money, but I
got it. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had 172 houses at the peak in 2009, and we lost 4, 5, 6, 7 in remote areas because of the unemployment.
Right. Right. Any further questions? It's a great program. We have Oxford houses in my area, and we appreciate them. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. With that, is anyone else here to testify on this? Nobody has signed up. Okay, seeing none, we will close the hearing on House Bill 2388. Do I need to open up the hearing again in order to get Iris Bell to answer questions? Okay, we will reopen the hearing on 2392. Iris, thank you for staying. Representative Wisnant, you had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mrs. Bell, for staying. I think it's probably going to take more background for me, and the committee members will give me a little leeway here. The Chair and I were, we had a deep connection with the former Commission on Children and Family System, and so we had some concerns about the creation of the Early Child, Early Learning Center, and so I'm not really sure as how, you know, we have a bill here talking about you wanting to use the money or the Oregon Youth Development Council to address gang violence, but now we got the counties coming in saying they want to be sure to expand that to other things. We had one of the ladies had a presentation about how successful her programs is, but she needs to continue funding that. So can you talk about that? And you know, are we? And I know the bill enough that, you know, we were supposed to come up with a plan of how we're going to end, you know, committee members, that the Commission on Children and Families goes out the end of the fiscal year, June 30th, and they're gone. They were extended in the bill because we had some concerns about how this is going to fit. Some of us were on the Education Committee earlier meeting today, and we had Dr. Peru and Mr. Saxton talking about Early Learning Center and how that's going to work. But the hubs that are going to be providing this service, some of those are coming under, you know, the health thing, the CO, the coordinate CCOs. So it's really complicated to understand how, because we're concerned, I think the Chair and anyone on this committee is concerned how these services of all the counties that came in and talked about these viable programs that are going on in their own community, how that's going to be funded, how it's going to survive. And so,
Chair Tomei, Vice Chair Kohnberg, Vice Chair Olson, Iris Bell, Director of the Youth Development Council. With respect to the Youth Development Council, I need to say again, we're neutral on the bill. However, what I was attempting to do earlier was to make some clarifications on what was stated by many of the folks who came up regarding various funding streams and how those funding streams would be utilized and which funding streams would go away and which would not. And at this point in time, the way in which the Youth Development Council has looked at the funding and looked at guidelines for the transition of this funding is to look at a three-tiered approach, really three ways to approach this. Looking at some very specific targeted investments, but also looking at those successful programs that exist, some of which you heard here today, and the continuation of the funding for those programs. And then, in addition, looking at an allocation formula. So you'd have three different ways in which there would be opportunity to either continue the funding, either to identify new targeted funding, or across a 36-county system, look at how you might allocate funding through a funding formula with the caveat that there'd be performance-based criteria in that formula, so that we could get the outcomes that we need. As you said, Dr. Crew was speaking earlier, the YDC, the Youth Development Council, and the Early Learning Council, along with the Department of Ed, are aligning their particular strategic plans, action plans, with that of the Oregon Education Investment Board. And so what we would be doing, actually, is, again, making these investments, making funding available, making allocation funding available, but doing it in such a way that it aligns with the direction of the Oregon Education Investment Board. If you looked at the areas of work that I've identified and that you see there in your packet that I gave you, there are the very same areas of work that many of the folk here testified to. So the areas of work where we're going to make the funding available will not go away. It'll be based, however, on getting the outcomes, making the investments to get the outcomes. And so that's where I think there needs some clarification. The board, the council itself, was in the process of developing the guidelines for the transition of the funding. And those guidelines were due to come out at the end of this month. And they would go out far and wide so all would know about the transitional plans and about the transitional funding plans. However, the bill
was sort of introduced prior to our ability. You know, we haven't been in existence that long. The Early Learning Council has been around now, and the work of the Early Learning Council has been around for about almost 2 years now. We began our work in September. So given that we've begun our work in September, we've been working very diligently in order to ensure that we would be able to put in place a strategic plan, develop some metrics, and then begin to share with communities the transitional plan around this three-tiered approach, which would be targeted investments, which would also be looking at these successful programs. We want successful programs. They would help us get to the outcomes that we're looking for. So many of the comments made about the programs that are existing could potentially continue to be funded.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. Can I? I think what I heard from the testimony today is that we've got people that are working, going to lose their job, and you're going to lose that continuity and things like that is one of their concerns that they have. You know, how do we address that?
Right.
And, you know, because, and I know personally, and you know too, from our working together, that the county's really dependent on that basic funding to sort of have people to look after these programs and to follow through on them. So they're concerned about the basic grant. You and I know that. They always have been about that. And but then you've got to focus on the programs and the successes. I understand
that.
But because things are moving, and I guess I don't think it's a secret. I think everyone could figure out this was a preemptive move to be sure that, you know, they were covered or whatever. But we got to work this together,
right,
and take into account you've got people out there in the counties that have been doing this for a long time. They're looking at job termination or whatever because the funding goes away. It's always money. Has there been minutes on the Youth Development Council of what the strategic plans is? That's not out, you're saying, yet?
Well the strategic action plan is out, and I do believe posted. What we're intending to do is to put an entire packet out again to the entire communities that are concerned here and others to give them a sense of the direction and how things are going. But again, I think it would be premature to suggest that a particular program is going away, particularly if they are making very good, significant outcomes and that they are having an impact in their communities, particularly if those are aligned with educational success or, again, with juvenile crime reduction. I mean, those two pieces with the pieces that you basically heard today, and I heard sitting several programs that addressed academic success, several programs that addressed juvenile crime and the reduction of juvenile crime. Those are still very much, and again, if you look at the work areas, those would be continue to be areas of work and areas that we would identify for potential funding moving forward. So I think it's very premature, and again, we're neutral on the bill, but at the same time, I'm trying to make the clarifications around what I heard today and the information that folks need to have regarding the direction that the Youth Development Council is headed.
Madam Chair, I would ask then maybe that the Chair and if Mrs. Bell agrees, we don't rush this through. Don't bring this back for a work session too
mm-hmm.
soon. Do we have a chance to look at this?
Absolutely.
And the counties have time too, I think.
And I would offer any information that you would need from me or the council. I'd be happy to provide you with that.
And we can ask Ms. Bell to come back and meet with us again.
And then, Madam Chair, you could work with Representative Clem and the counties to see where the, you know, where
right.
they are. See, I think that'd be very helpful. I'll be glad to help you with that if you'd like.
Great. Representative Gilliam and then Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Staying, folks.
Ms. Bell, thank you for being here. I didn't hear all the testimony.
Right.
But as you described the three tiers of delivering services or allocating money, where in there is the concern about competitive grants? Where does that come from? You didn't mention it, and I think there's been a lot of concern about competitive grants.
So, Chair Tomei, Vice Chairs, Representative Gilliam, I did hear that as well, and I heard over and over again this whole idea of RFPing the money out, and people would then have to compete for the grants, that sort of thing. Again, there'd be this three-pronged approach. And when I look, when you look at the whole idea of the allocation formula, there would continue to be allocation formula across the 36 counties. Now, what would be the formula? If the formula would have to have performance-based criteria in it now, which is a bit different from the way it has been in the past. But this idea that all we're going to do is RFP out to nonprofits, that's a clarification that I need to make. It is not the intent of the council simply to RFP out to nonprofits.
Madam Chair, I also heard nobody was bucking against performance-based. I think we're in unity on that and from the different folks that I did hear testify. But again, I'm going to ask you, is there competitive grant-making based contracts? I'm trying to think of the right term. It's competitive, I apologize, competitive grant-making. Is that part of your strategy?
So, Chair Tomei, Vice Chair's Representative Gillum, I think that what I would describe that is the targeted investments. Maybe that's what is the same as what they're referring to. So in some instances, and I can give you an example of what is meant by that, if you have a community and a community is struggling towards supporting academic success, and there's a program in that community that is working really well, but that program needs another $10,000. That would be a targeted investment to that program to support what was going on in that community. So again, they would probably be an RFP process to say who can provide this particular service as a targeted investment. But that's not across, that's not would be across the board. And that wouldn't be the common way in which funding would be in communities. That would be a focused area where you know you can have an impact. And you'd be looking for the impact that you could have that could support a community moving forward. The other way in which, and in which they've spelled out in the bill itself, is through the allocation process. And the allocation process, so there would still be, I'm not saying the entire amount. Now, see, here's where there may be a problem. Now, you may have Title 20 funds. The entirety of Title 20 funds might not be allocated out, but there would be an allocation of those funds across the board through 36 communities, but not maybe the entire amount, because you would have to use some of it for investment, some of it for other ways of doing the business. But, again, no county, no community would be without some allocation of funds.
Madam Chair, if I can just say, I would like to say that I appreciate your hearing and I appreciate the fact that you will continue this conversation along the lines that Representative Wisdom talked about. I don't understand the synonymous nature of targeted investments and competitive grant making, so I hope we can get to the bottom of that in further discussion.
We'll have further hearings. Thank you, Representative. Representative Kenny Geyer.
Actually, that exchange answered my question, so
okay,
thank you.
Great. Any other questions or concerns? Thank you, Iris. Thank you for staying. Thank you, committee, for staying. With that, I close up the House Committee on Human Services and Housing. Thank you all for staying. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you for being time.